I've been doing this series about Love is All You Need, and just for those of you who've come in for this episode, we were looking the first week about love is the greatest thing in the world, and we looked at some of the characteristics of love. The week after that, about love is patient and love is kind, and last week we were looking at a number of things, qualities that love is not, and this morning I want to talk about a couple more of them. And so I'd like to read this passage out of the Bible. It's called the Love Chapter. This is 1 Corinthians 13. If I speak in human or angelic tongues, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. And then the part I'm going to speak on this morning. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. First thing this morning about is about the fact that love is not easily angered. We're living in an age when anger seems to be getting more and more prevalent, and we're sort of facing an epidemic of domestic violence. And a lot of people are at a bit of a loss to know what to do about it. You know, there are husbands who are beating up their wives. I hadn't realized the opposite was equally true until I've got a friend who is an industrial chaplain, and he was telling me about people in his factory that where he worked, came up to him with these men, came up to him saying this, we've got a problem in our marriage I really need to talk to you about, but I'm kind of ashamed of it. My wife is beating me up. And I said to him, go on. He said, no, he said, it's much more widespread than you'd think. So you've got husbands beating wives, and wife beating husbands, and then husbands and wives colluding together to beat up their children. And this is a sad, sad state of affairs. And it's like an epidemic, some people are suggesting. And these little children become the innocent victims of people who really just don't know how to control their anger. I was looking at a magazine article this week, actually, Is Anger Killing You? And basically, the article was saying that if we can only reduce the hostility that's in our lives, we're actually going to prolong our lives, that anger is just not good for us. And it talked about the fact that when you're raising kids, you can motivate children by being angry at them. And the children will respond initially simply out of fear, but long term, the effect is to produce sullenness and resentment in our children. So we've all got this problem. Anger builds up in us. We know this is not a very good thing. We know it's not good for us ourselves. We know it's not good for our relationships with other people. We know it's not a loving thing to do, but what do? If my anger starts building up within, what do? Well, I want to talk about this for a little while this morning. Here you are, you're in a situation, you're getting angry about something. You think, hey, I shouldn't be, but what do you do? A few suggestions. Number one is to call for a time out. Thomas Jefferson said that when I'm angry, I count to 10. But when I'm really angry, I count to 100. Good to take a time out and use the time out constructively. And the big thing you can do is to try and understand. Why am I getting angry? To analyze this. What's going on with me that I feel this stuff building up inside me? And now it takes a lot of courage to do this, because the sad thing is, often the reasons we get angry are actually very base, selfish reasons that we don't like to acknowledge. But why am I feeling angry? Why is this stuff building up inside me? The first thing about it is really anger isn't the root problem, actually. Anger is like a warning light. You know, you're driving along the car and the light comes on the dashboard, and you look at it and you think, hey, I've got a problem here. What is the problem? And the light will tell you what the problem is. And anger's like that. It's a warning light. It's a symptom. It's not the basic cause. The basic cause of anger is caused by other kind of stuff. And if we take some time out to try and analyze it. The problem is, at the point where you're feeling angry and you think, whoops, I better take some time out here, it's very, very unlikely at this point you're going to sit down and do the kind of analysis that I'm talking about here at this kind of length. But maybe afterwards, when it's all over, you can think, why did that happen? And what can I learn out of this stuff? Why was I getting angry? Anger isn't the real problem. It's a symptom of something else. Now, there's some people who think that anger is basically caused by three things. One is hurt. I get hurt and I get angry. At the physical level, I'm hammering a nail and I miss and I hit my thumb and I get angry. What do I get angry at? Well, I just get angry. I've been hurt, so I get angry. And then at the emotional level, it's similar. Someone hurts me. Someone says some bitter, sarcastic thing or whatever, and I get angry. That's the first possible cause of anger. I'm hurt. The second one is fear. I feel threatened. If you get an animal and you back it into a corner against its will, sooner or later it's going to strike out at you. It's fearful. It feels threatened. And the third possible cause of anger is frustration. You know, when you're sitting in a traffic jam and it's not moving and the guy right behind you decides this is the moment, start blowing on his horn, he's frustrated. He's also stupid and he's also angry. And that's the nature of frustration. We get frustrated and after that demonstrates itself in anger. Now, to respond out of anger, the Bible tells us, is not a wise thing to do. A couple of verses out of, there's a book of Proverbs in the Old Testament filled with all sorts of wise sayings, and it has quite a bit in there about anger. And here's a couple of quotations. Fools, it says, fools gives full vent to their anger, but the wise keep themselves under control. And then in Proverbs chapter 34, I like this one, for as churning the milk produces butter, and as twisting the nose produces blood, so stirring up anger produces strife. Not a good idea to get angry. So it's good. Here's the first thing. If I find somewhere or other I'm getting angry, this is not a loving thing to do according to the Bible. What do I do about it? First of all, I can take some time out and think, you know, why is this going on for me? Second thing is, don't ventilate. A few years ago, among the pop psychologists, there was a kind of theory floating around, and the theory went more or less like this, that every one of us have got a certain quantity of anger inside us. It's like, you could imagine, it's like a bucket, full of anger. So the thing is, with your anger, what you need to do is sort of unload it. You get your bucket full of anger, and you just throw it out. You ventilate. You get rid of this anger. And this, it was suggested by the pop psychologist, this is the answer for your anger. It isn't the answer for your anger, actually. As someone else pointed out, that anger, it's not really as though we've got a bucket inside us. We've actually got an anger factory. And the more angry you actually get, the more anger is produced. Try it sometime. You know, when you find yourself getting angry and you really give into it and you get really angry, you find this in a sense produces more anger. So no, it's not the case that each of us just carry around one little bucket load of anger, but there's an anger factory inside. The second thing though, and this is hugely important, is that if you just ventilate your anger, this does terribly destructive things to other people. I remember in this, I'm not sure if it's still around as much as it used to be a few years ago, but because pop psychology stuff sort of comes and goes fairly rapidly, but I remember a few years ago when this was all the rage, I found people used to come up to me and they'd go red in the face and they'd shout. And they get angry at me. Obviously, they're getting angry with me. And I used to really think, oh, what have I done? And I'd hear this description, and I'd think, well, I know I'm a bit of a rotter, but surely I'm not this bad. And then, after a while, the penny dropped. The person who's a ventilator, you know, who just comes and, you know, I've got a whole lot of anger, and I'm going to get rid of it on you, are actually telling us more about themselves than they're telling us about us. And so just ventilating your anger, it may give into someone's pop psychology theory, but it's going to do awfully, awfully destructive things to relationships. You need to learn how to handle anger better than that. Don't ventilate. The third thing, here's what to do when you're angry. The answer is simply to confess it. Face up to it. I've got a problem here with anger. I'm angry. And to confess it to myself and to others, and most importantly to God. I'm angry. And why am I angry? Am I hurt here? Someone's done something to me and it's really hurt me and I'm feeling angry about that. Or am I just frustrated? Or do I feel threatened? Are you saying stuff to me and it really threatens me, and the only way I know how to respond to that is just to get angry with you, which is not a helpful thing to do. Far more helpful is to confess this to myself, to have the courage to admit it to myself, to other people, and to God. And the fourth thing about this anger thing is to renew your mind. In the book of Romans, in the Bible, it says, "Do not conform any longer to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." In other words, it's about developing fresh patterns in your head. Instead of giving into a negative, destructive emotion like anger, is to kind of have your mind renewed by God. Let me suggest one helpful way this can happen, actually, is to choose the company you keep. I remember a number of years ago there was a woman here who was fairly hot-tempered, and or she had a short fuse, anyway. And she was talking to me one day, and she wasn't ventilating, she was just talking to me. And she said, "You know, there's a person in the church here, his name was Lionel Stewart, so if you've been around here for a long time, you would remember Lionel. He was a kind of sagely Maori. He had mana. And the Baptist denomination took him away from us and put him in charge of the Baptist Maori work up in the North Island." But she said, I like sitting talking to Lionel. She said, when I talk to him, she said, I feel calm inside. And if anger's your problem, very helpful if you can find someone in your life somewhere who has that effect on you. Because if you just spend your time with other angry people, you experience the phenomenon known as transference. That you get the other angry people around you, and there's something about anger that you catch. And you find yourself feeling angry. And this doesn't help. It won't help today either if you go home and turn the television on. Because by the time today's out, you will have seen enacted before you all sorts of ways about how not to manage anger. And our society's sending us all the wrong information. And if you watch the soaps and other stuff, when someone gets angry, you know, they let people have it back. Or they go away and they scheme and they plot about how to get back to them. Or in the American ones, they pull out a gun and shoot them. And what's modeled in front of us over and over again on the television is how not to respond to anger. So, what do you do with anger? Well, you know, if this is a problem for you, you're really struggling with it. Jesus is really good at tackling the root problems of the stuff we struggle with. See, if at the basis of your feeling angry there's a sense of hurt or frustration or fear, Jesus wants to come into your life. And he wants to tackle this problem of hurt and frustration and fear, and he wants to replace this stuff with his healing love, and he really does. And you can open your life up to Jesus. You can give him your heart, and he will come into your life, and he will address the problem of your hurt and your frustration and your fear. And when he comes into your life, he brings your healing love. Now, here's what not to do with anger. Most of all, but it's the thing most of us do with it most of the time, and that's to bury it. Just push it down, repress it. Because what happens is you got your anger here, and this is a live emotion floating around, and most often we think it's not. This is not a very loving thing to do, to just ventilate and blurt out my anger. So what I do, I just push it down. The problem is, someone has said, if we swallow our anger, our stomach keeps count. And when you take this kind of stuff and you just push it down, your body cries out in response, because we were not made to carry around whole big helpings of anger like this. And what happens when you push it down, your body will respond in some way sooner or later, and you become sick in some way. The anger will find the weak point in your body, and your body will respond to this. And what happens is you've pushed this anger down and you're keeping a record of what's going on. And the second part of what I want to talk about this morning is that love keeps no record of wrongs. And yet for a lot of us, we've had the stuff that's happened to us, we've pushed it down, and we're accumulating a record deep in our hearts of the wrongs that have been done to us. I've heard several situations like this. A fellow came to me and said, you know, I just don't love my wife anymore. I don't feel anything for her. I feel dead on the inside. What's wrong with me? And I found in situations like that, often what's happened is that people have taken negative stuff that has happened to them. They've been keeping a record book of wrongs that their partner had been doing all these things to them, and they've simply just pushed it down. And love keeps no record of wrongs. So why isn't keeping a record of wrongs and what other people have done to you, why is that not a good thing? Well, the first answer is that we hurt ourselves. If you're keeping a record of the wrong other people have done to you, you hurt yourself, you get all churned up by this. But the funny thing is, the person who's actually hurt you may be totally oblivious to this. They've got no idea that you're all churned up and angry and upset about all this kind of stuff at all. They're going on with their lives, but here's me, and I'm so angry at what this person's done to me, and I'm keeping a record of the wrongs they've done to me. Someone said it's a bit like driving a car, watching the rear view mirror. And when you drive a car watching the rear view mirror, sooner or later you're going to crash. Because we're tied into what's happened in our past. Someone has done these wrong things to us, and we've got a record, we've kept this stuff, and this stuff is now controlling our lives in the present. So instead of us responding appropriately to what's going on in our lives at the moment, we're tied into what's happened in our past. We're looking backwards at what's happened in the past, and sooner or later we're going to make a mess of the present. So love keeps no record of wrongs. We hurt ourselves, but we hurt other people too. Because if you go around and you're keeping a record of wrongs, and as soon as some new person walks in your life, you whip out your record book and you say, boy, you want to hear all these hurtful things that people have done to me, and you proceed to give people a recital. And you know, we all know there are folks like this, so locked into the past that all they can do is tell us about all these terrible things that other people have done to them. And the trouble is that you end up very, very lonely. Because realistically, no one wants to hang out around someone who's so locked in their past, all they can tell you about is all the wrong stuff that other people have done to them. That's a terrible way to spend your life. And sadly, you end up friendless. Because people just don't enjoy hanging out around someone like that. So what do you do? If you're locked into this, you're kind of locked into your past, and you've got your little record book of wrongs, and you get a certain pleasure out of telling people all these rotten people have done this terrible stuff to you. What do you do? First one is to face the truth. God will not be shocked if you tell him the truth. God has known all along that your life is controlled by this record book of wrong things that other people have done to you. He will not be shocked if you finally acknowledge to him, hey, my life is controlled by this stuff and I just don't like it. He knows anyway. And the fact is, we can be healed to the extent that we're honest. That's the first thing, to face the truth. Someone said this is a bit corny, really, a bit cheesy, I suppose. Revealing your feeling is the beginning of healing. I think it's true, really. There's no closure without disclosure. That's true too. Well, sorry about that. It's a bit cheesy, but... So first of all, you face the truth. The second thing you do is you forgive. And this is the key. This is the main point of what I'm talking about this morning. You forgive. there's an incident in the Gospels, in the Bible, in the New Testament. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, if my brother keeps on sinning against me, how many times do I have to forgive him? Seven times? No, not seven times, said Jesus, but 70 times seven. In other words, you forgive. This is what Jesus is saying. If this stuff is going on in your past, it's not going to lock you back there. You've got to learn to forgive so that eventually you lose count of the number of times you're forgiving. You can count up to seven, but you could never count up to 490, 70 times seven. Now, I find that people often say, look, I've confessed this thing. There's this stuff that's happened in my past, and I know it's controlling me, and I confess it, and I've confessed it to God, but it's still there. It still kind of comes back to haunt me. What do I do about it? The answer is, you keep on confessing it. Like Jesus said, 70 times 7. You lose count of the number of times, because forgiveness is a process. It is very, very unlikely that if you've had a lot of pain done to you, you've got a record book of wrongs that you're running around keeping, that you're just going to say, God, I'm sorry about this stuff. This may happen, but most often forgiveness is a process. You've got to embark on a process of discovering healing, of continuing to confess this. And so how do you know when it's gone? Well, it's gone when it doesn't hurt you anymore. Real simple. Every time it comes up, you forgive until you know it's gone. And you know it's gone when it doesn't hurt, and you can pray good into the life of the people who've hurt you. But how on earth do you do this? Because this is humanly impossible. There are very few Nelson Mandelas in the world. And Nelson Mandela had a long, long time in the prison on Robben Island to read the Gospels and to read about the life of Jesus. And the day came when he started writing to some of his friends outside the prison that he decided to become a follower of Jesus, and to have his life motivated by hate anymore would not be the answer. And he's come out of prison and demonstrated what a life of reconciling love actually looks like. But his motivation came from Jesus. Because to find a life like that, this is not human. It goes against the grain. We want to retaliate. We want to get back at people. And so Jesus told the story. The kingdom of heaven is like this. Once there was a king who decided to check on his servants' accounts. He just began to do so when one of them was brought in who owed him millions of pounds. The servant didn't have enough to pay his debt, so the king ordered him to be sold as a slave with his wife and his children and all that he had in order to pay the debt. The servant fell on his knees before the king. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay you everything. The king felt sorry for him, so he forgave him the debt and let him go. Then the man went out and met one of his fellow servants who owed him a few pounds. He grabbed him and started choking him. Pay back what you owe me, he said. His fellow servant said, be patient with me, and I'll pay you back. But he refused. Instead, he had him thrown into jail until he should pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were very upset and went to the king and told him everything. So he called the servant in. You worthless slave, he said. I forgave you the whole amount you owed me just because you asked me to. You should have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had mercy on you. The king was very angry, and he sent the servant to jail to be punished until he should pay back the whole amount. And Jesus concluded, that is how my Father in heaven will treat every one of you, unless you forgive your brother from your heart. See, forgiveness is right at the heart of the message of Jesus. And what he's talking about here is motivation. How can you forgive other people from your heart? How can you stop keeping a record book of wrongs? How can you stop having that controlling your life unless you yourself have been forgiven by God? But when you're forgiven by God, then you get the inner motivation that if God has forgiven me all the stuff that I've done, then I can be forgiven, I can be empowered to forgive others. You see, it's a bit like this. This is actually a Bible, but suppose this is a record book of my life. You know, and most of us imagine that God has actually got a book. This is it, the life and times of Mary Robertson. And every few years, a few more pages get added, and this is a catalogue of my life. Now, this would be the truth. This wouldn't be the public image of the deeply religious man that I portray from the front here. This would be the truth. All the lot, everything. The whole story. Known only to Marge, but now the stuff she doesn't even know too. Not much, I don't think, but but the stuff that God knows. Here it is, the record book of my life. And this weighs me down. I mean, this is a big, if I am serious about this, and I want to find God, this is a huge problem. And in the Bible it tells us an amazing thing. It says that we've all gone astray like so many lost sheep. And the Lord laid on Jesus the sin of us all. And here it is. I can be forgiven. I can be forgiven because Jesus went to the cross. And when he went to the cross, he took all this stuff, this junk, this wrongdoing in my life, he bore it at the cross. So over here, I could be free. I could be forgiven. And because I'm forgiven, therefore I am empowered to forgive others. With Jesus going to the cross, it seems to me it's a bit like a lightning rod. You know, if you have a house way out in the country somewhere, there's no other houses around and you're on the top of a hill, you need to put up a lightning rod so that when the lightning strikes, it won't demolish the whole house, but the lightning will go to the rod and be disseminated. The power goes out down into the earth. And it seems to me that when Jesus was on the cross, he was like a lightning rod. And all the anger and all the wrongdoing and all the evil in the world, it was like it was unleashed onto him. And he took it. And he took all this anger and this resentment and all this stuff that does such destructive stuff in our lives. He took it for me and for you, that we could be forgiven. And when we're forgiven, we're then empowered. We no longer have to be enslaved to our anger and our record books of wrongdoing or what others have done to us. We can actually be free to be new kind of people who can actually forgive. And the power of forgiveness is released. There's a pastor of a church in Southern California named Rick Warren that a few of us from here went to last year, and he tells a couple of stories. One is about a woman attending his church who'd gone through a hugely painful divorce. Hugely painful. And in the course of the stress involved with the process of the divorce, she became blind in one eye. And she'd gone to several doctors, and they'd given her treatment and so on, and finally one had said to her, "You guys are going to have to live with this. Because of what you've been through, you've got it for life." And this morning he was preaching about resentment and about how it does such destructive things to us. And he said, as he tells the story at the end of his message, he said, "Now some of you are like this. You're keeping a record book of wrongs that other people have done to you, and you're resentful." And he said, "Let it go. You know, Jesus died to forgive you." And so this woman prayed, this prayer sitting in the church there, she prayed, "God, I've been resentful, and I want to confess it's wrong. I want to let it go." She walked out of the church and across the patio that's outside the church. And as she walked out across the patio, she suddenly realized she was seeing out of both eyes. He tells another story about a guy in this church. He'd gone to speak in, visiting speaker, and he visited this chap on a Saturday before he was to preach in the church, and he was a dairy farmer. And 6 months before, he'd been kicked by a bull in his lower spine, and he'd been paralyzed, and he'd been in a wheelchair ever since. And he visited him, and he said he'd never met a more bitter man in his whole life than this old guy. And he said he was bitter at God, and he was bitter at the doctors who couldn't put him right, and he was bitter at the insurance company who wouldn't pay up for what had happened, and he was bitter at the people in the church who didn't visit him, and he was bitter at the bull. Anything he could be bitter about, he was bitter. And he said he was just a bitter, twisted guy. And he wanted Rick to pray with him, and he said, "I'll pray for you." He said, "Pray for him to be healed." And he said, "Sure, I have no idea what God intends for your life, whether he would heal you of what you've got or not, but I know one thing. What God really wants you to face up to is this bitterness that's just controlling your life. At which point he said this old guy began to cry. And finally he sat there in his wheelchair just shaking. And he confessed to God, I've been resentful and I've been bitter. The next day he was at church. He came along in his wheelchair and he sat up the back. Rick finished his message. He said, there may be some of you, you'd like us to pray with you. You've got something, so when the service is finished, you just come down the front and we'll pray for you. And he said to his amazement, this guy gets up out of his wheelchair and walks down the front. First time he walked in 6 months. And that's what keeping a record book of wrong, that's what being resentful, being bearing your anger, it can just do destructive things to you. Now, they're two quite dramatic stories, but bearing your anger and holding resentments against other people, it doesn't do you any good. And Jesus wants to set you free from it. He wants to heal you deep down inside because he loves you, because he went to the cross to take all the stuff on himself that we could be forgiven. And so we're going to ask him to do that. Let's bow our heads in prayer. There may be some stuff that's going on in your life and you're really angry about it. Or there may be people who've hurt you and you're keeping a record book of wrongs. And you will know this. You may fool other people, but none of us can fool God. And if you are like that, I want you to kind of picture in your mind that Jesus going to the cross and dying there and taking all the stuff that you've been carrying around him, and he's taking it for you. That you can be freed, that you can be free to forgive. And if this is you, you can pray in your heart. You say, Jesus, I'm sorry that I have allowed negative, destructive emotions like anger and resentment to have a part of my life. And this morning I want to confess this to you and I really want to let go of it. Thank you that you died for me. You took the pain of all this destructive stuff so I could be free and be forgiven. And in return, Jesus, I want to give my heart to you. I really want to follow you. And live out a life of love to other people that you told us we were to live. Because I pray that in your name. Amen.